From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the film and book universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners, let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Here we are in the title chapter of this book. My name's Mary Larson.
My name's Blake. You know, I've only been enchanted by one woman in my life. Aww. And she just happens to be sitting across the way from me.
Oh, I am
just
her like, Vila.
Totally.
It's the silver hair.
Utterly enchanted. It is the silver hair.
Well, you are way too kind, my love. And I am blessed to be able to be here chatting about all things Potter. We're in this jam-packed chapter. So we're going to be moving along pretty swimmingly. But here it is, chapter 16, The Goblet of Fire, which I just love looking at where it is in the book itself because it's kind of like two-thirds of the way through. And here we are. It's only Halloween. Only Halloween, and the Triwizard Tournament hasn't even begun
yet.
Well,
we're not two-thirds of the way through.
I mean, one-third, sorry. Yeah, one-third of the way through.
Yeah, maybe a little
bit
more.
But still.
We're probably just short of half.
Correct.
Yeah.
I would agree. Maybe like a five, three-eighths.
Sure. What ifs. I'm not a mathematician.
Mary, calm down. Exactly. Dumbledore now took out his wand and tapped three times upon the top of the casket. The lid creaked slowly open. Dumbledore reached inside it and pulled out a large, roughly hewn wooden cup. Remind you of anything? Indiana Jones.
Oh,
Last Crusade.
He chose poorly.
It would have been entirely unremarkable had it not been full to the brim with dancing blue-white flames. Dumbledore closed the casket and placed the goblet carefully on top of it, where it would be clearly visible to everyone in the hall. Anybody wishing to submit themselves as champion must write their name and school clearly on a slip of parchment and drop it into the goblet, said Dumbledore. Aspiring champions have 24 hours in which to put their names forward. Tomorrow night, Halloween, the goblet will return the names of the three it has judged most worthy to represent their schools. The goblet will be placed in the entrance hall tonight, and there it will be freely accessible to all those wishing to compete.
Dumbledore in this chapter kind of rules. I'm not going to lie.
He's the host with the most.
He just gets it done. And he just allows the kids to just be idiots and just say, sorry, told you. Shouldn't have done it.
Oh, okay. I thought you were in regards to what I just read. So, okay.
Well,
now
yeah,
I'm
I mean, yes.
But yes, this is when book and film Dumbledore start to veer right at the end of this chapter. Not even the end of this chapter. Up until then, we're kind of in the same bit, but he is. He's just this kind of whimsical, quirky, magnificent man we enjoy.
The book version of Dumbledore is certainly more in line with the Dumbledore of the past in the books. And you're right, Mary. This is when I think... And by this point in the film, we really haven't even seen Dumbledore all that much.
Not really.
Like, and it's already, we're already at a fork in the road.
Because in the movies, I feel like you begin the school year and this is what's happening. They don't necessarily wait until Halloween. So it just has a very different feeling to
it. Yeah.
So we get up, we actually start this chapter.
Hold on. We got to play the sound.
Sorry.
We got things to do.
I'm just so excited.
What are we doing here?
So excited.
Killing me, Marvin.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Now you can go.
All right. Sorry, everybody.
You gotta hear the music.
I know.
Killing me.
We're here, as I said, chapter 16. The little synopsis, of course, is that the Triwizard Tournament is beginning. The students of Beauxbatons and Durmstrang have filed on in. We know where everybody's sleeping. There's no questions about that, all right? But the whole school is aflutter. And the kids get to put their names inside the Goblet of Fire, some successfully, some unsuccessfully. And at the end, We actually have four wizards whose names are taken out of the Goblet of Fire.
Right. It's not great, Harry. That should be the new sound. Not great, Harry. Ooh. But just, you know, for the sake of posterity, if I could find... There it is.
Not great, Bob.
You know, it's like... I always keep picturing different shirt ideas. Blake, of course, designs a lot of shirts for the MerriamBlakeStore.com.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
And one of them that I think Shameless would be plug. So fun is like a picture of the Goblet of Fire with the little piece of paper that says Harry Potter and right underneath it, awkward, with a period.
Or not great, Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's something like that.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
I just
lines.
Feel like non-Potterverse people might not understand the not great Harry bit.
Yeah, that's true. But that's okay. It's fine.
But awkward.
Awkward, yes. Or it should just be the picture of Michael Scott's face.
I don't know how like, that would be on a shirt.
But him holding like the Harry Potter.
Yeah, I don't know how that would go, my love. I adore you. So anyway, as I said, we pick up in this chapter on October 30th. Okay, so this is when Beauxbatons and Durmstrang students are arriving. And Ron is just tickled pink that Victor Krum is here. He wants his autograph. You overhear the six-year girl students saying like, oh my gosh, I don't have a quill. Like, can I borrow some lipstick so he can sign something? Yeah. Everyone is pumped that Victor Krum is on Hogwarts grounds.
And the way that they characterize Victor Krum in the book seems very different than what it is in the film.
Oh.
In the film, he seems like a big, he seemed like a big guy.
Okay.
In the book, he seems like a skinny, slight kid almost.
I didn't like... Okay, I wasn't watching the movie being like, this isn't Victor.
No, I'm just saying, like, there are some really big adaptive choices. Mm-hmm. And even the way that, like, Karkaroff treats Krum, being like, hey, you want some wine? And the kid being like, I'll take some wine.
And, I will.
And he's like, no, get out of here. Who are you? Who are you? Get out of here. Yep. You know, like, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was quite funny. Quite funny. This
I
whole
agree.
Characterization.
I concur. So, you know, we get already. What's interesting is that we obviously don't spend tons and tons of time getting to understand Durmstrang and Beauxbatons, but just where they sit, you kind of get their vibe.
Yeah, the Beauxbatons going with Ravenclaw. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and again, it just. This all feels. Pretty indicative of the schools mm-hmm. that are they're coming from. I mean, the Durmstrang going with the Slytherin, and just Slytherin feels more masculine. It just does. I think in my opinion, and in my opinion, Ravenclaw feels more feminine.
What does that matter?
Well, because
they're a co-ed school.
But I know. But the way that the book is characterizing them, it just Beauxbatons with the gold and the blue and. How everything just feels so, like we were talking about, I think, what, it was last chapter, we were talking about how the author gives us a feel for what these schools are.
Okay.
And, you know, again, Beauxbatons coming down from the heavens and mm-hmm. Durmstrang coming up from, you know, below the earth. It just feels, Durmstrang, and even the name Durmstrang, it's like, it feels almost Germanic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels more conflicted. It feels more harsh, Durmstrang, you know, like it almost reminds me of like Du Hast, you know, that horrible song. So I like how... the schools are aligning themselves with houses. And you know what, Mary, too? I'm gonna say something here. I think it's gonna surprise you.
Oh man.
The movie really misses the Vila aspect. It really does. And I'll tell you why. Because it's important to have who we now know
Floor,
thank you. Who we now know, Floor, at this point, it's Floor Delacour who, you know, enchants Ron.
Yes.
And she's part Vila.
Yes.
And there's a whole argument about it. And I wish the movie had this aspect. Do you agree?
Potentially, but honestly, there's so much to pack into here that... I don't see how it would have really worked because the Vila in general are not brought into the story.
Mm-hmm.
at all in the movie.
No, no, I know. That's what I'm saying. So, I wish the movie had this aspect. Like, it misses this aspect of what is so enchanting about Fleur Delacour.
I mean, I think just her beauty. I think the movie could lay on that alone, that Ron's like, wow, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose
what a beautiful woman. It is interesting, though, in the book sense, to note that Ron and possibly other students who were easily influenced under the Confundus curse were Imperio, I apologize, Imperio, were essentially still hypnotized by the Vila's power. So you think back at the World Cup, how Ron and tons of other guys, Stan Shunpunk, everybody was just like lying about their professions and just doing all this stuff for the Vila. And when we get to see Ron under the Imperius curse, he's obviously easily manipulated.
Sure,
and it even has this long-lasting effects, whereas Harry it doesn't work on.
Mm-hmm.
Harry doesn't have the same effect with the Vila. He's not as
well, I mean, but
entranced,
like,
entranced as someone like Ron, as some of these other boys as she walks by. So it is very interesting to see that maybe this part of his brain, maybe you know, his ability to have that be easily manipulated is just something that is very strong for him. Whereas oculomancy, not a strong suit. You know, not letting Voldemort into his brain, is a little different. But I just think that it's pretty interesting that he is able to kind of keep the desire of the Vila out of his system.
Yeah, and you're right. This keeps going to what the characters that the author is creating. I mean, Ron is impressionable. You know, Ron, you're right. The Imperius curse, all of these things, and Hermione and Harry can laugh, and they can kind of bust on Ron for how he's acting with Fleur Delacour. And the fact that he's just so enchanted. I know I keep using that word, but it's just he can't even speak to her properly.
Yeah,
like,
it's cute.
I love this. And also it just reminds you that these kids are getting older. Once again, we had the Uranus joke before, and now we have this scene too.
Yep.
It just keeps reminding you that these kids are getting older. There are feelings that are being felt, and Ron is feeling all of the feelings. Poor Ron.
As a 14-year-old boy would.
That's true.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So, of course, then we have, so on October 30th, Dumbledore welcomes everybody. Welcome. I loved. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, ghosts, and most particularly, guests. And I love that the ghosts get to have that. He doesn't say, like, faculty, staff, those are included in the ladies and gentlemen, but he really still points out the ghosts. And this is just another beautiful way that the author is able to still interweave the fact that even though the ghosts aren't a huge presence right now, you know, we're not hanging out with Sir Nicholas and learning about the Death's Day party and all this kind of stuff, but they're still referenced. They're still like, these members are still here. Because obviously they play major roles inside this story. So I don't know, I liked that little
bit. Kind of out on the ghosts. Kind of out.
You're just rude.
Am I rude?
You just are.
Oh, that's not fair. Just because I'm out on something that you're not, that means I'm rude?
No.
Get out of here with that.
No, I'm just saying that you are rude. Fact.
True. Very. Oh, you know what, Mary? Bam!
Just like that. A winner! Okay. We get a couple of funny moments with Ron and the food. The bouillabaisse, for example.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, he's looking at, there's all these foreign dishes to really, which I thought was really cool and very kind as Hogwarts, as the host school, that, you know, they realize that people coming from different countries and different cultures may eat different things. So they make sure to have meals that people might like. And Hermione's even able to point out that that's bouillabaisse. She had it when she was on holiday in France, which was previously mentioned in the earlier book. Was it this book or the earlier book? Like when they're on the summer holidays.
Yeah, it was the previous book.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah, so I just love, once again, having this continuity that, like, oh yeah, we will once again mention that Hermione traveled to France on holiday.
Right.
I don't know, it's just neat. Yeah,
oh, it's consistent world building.
Yes.
It shows you that, you know, again, it's these little teeny tiny details that the author is putting in that make the world feel lived in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in like in keeping with that world being lived in, there's also something to be said too of we were talking earlier about the houses choosing, I'm sorry, the schools choosing which houses they're going to sit with. I mean, Durmstrang going to the Slytherin table. I mean, Durmstrang has a focus on the dark arts.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So for them to sit with Slytherin also feel, it just feels natural. It just feels lived in. It mm-hmm. feels real.
Mm-hmm.
Like these people are making actual choices. Yes. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we get some more of the Vila aspect. And then, of course, Barty Crouch Sr.
Yeah.
And
good distinction.
Barty Crouch is there, and oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the other bloke's name.
Ludo Bagman. I got you.
Are arriving, and there's like this whole hubbub. Like, what are they doing here? They organize this flipping event. Right. Okay, this is what they do. So of course they're going to be. And that's when they acknowledge that they in fact are going to be the judges. That the three heads of school plus Ludo and Barty Sr.
Yeah.
are going to be judging this
also
competition.
Another huge difference from the film.
The no Ludo Bagman?
No, and the fact that Barty Crouch Sr. And Ludo Bagman, they're not judges. They don't even really pay attention to the judges in the film. There's no attention to it whatsoever.
Yeah, they don't make a big hubbub of judges.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just a big difference.
It's unnecessary.
Yes.
They gloss over it.
Yeah, would you say that the film does a good job in these aspects of the adaptation?
Yes.
I think I would probably. Because Ludo Bagman, essentially,
they don't need
is Ludo unnecessary.
I do not envy the writers that had to sit down and woodshed and take apart this book and create an entirely different story and yet still have a lot of the things and themes, and then have to bring it to the author and be like, so here's what we got. What can we cut?
Yeah.
You know, like I know they did that. For example, in book 5, they want to cut out Creature.
Right.
The house elf.
And she's like, oh,
and
no.
She said, oh no, you
no,
can't.
No. We need him.
You could cut out Ludo Bagman. You can't cut out
Here's the live
Creature.
Sound of the author.
No, God, please. No.
Yes.
No.
That's right.
No. Yes.
Sorry, author.
No!
We're doing it.
So then we go on, and they have the Goblet of Fire, and it's this grand unveiling, and we get to know a little bit more. Barty Crouch Jr. just looks like a really cranky bloke, and Ludo Bagman, super happy. Kids are already loving him. And they take out the Goblet of Fire, which I read earlier. Dumbledore drew an age line around the Goblet of Fire.
Yes.
He and the other headmasters, because of the previous deaths and how dangerous it is, they know what the tournament entails. They decide that this is going to be how they keep kids out. It's not that the Goblet of Fire itself will not accept someone who's younger.
Right. It's the enchantment.
The age line that Dumbledore
makes.
There's
a big distinction.
Mm-hmm. And then also he really makes sure that we understand that by putting your name in the Goblet of Fire, if it's chosen, constitute a binding magical contract. There can be no change of heart once you become a champion. Please be very sure that you are wholeheartedly prepared to play before you drop your name in the goblet. So it's important for us to stick to that, because Harry is only 14. Harry did not put his name in the Goblet of Fire, and yet he is still chosen by the Goblet of Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Henceforth, this magical binding contract, what I don't think gets enough weight in the movie. Like, they're just like, whatever, it's a magical binding contract. But when you think about the unbreakable vow that happens between Snape and Narcissa, you know, and the really importance that is put upon that mm-hmm. this is a magical bind. This is a magical contract. Like, I wanted them to go a little more in depth. Like,
almost kind of like the unbreakable vow.
In the importance in the movie.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like it. And I mean, not to the level of, you know, that if you broke the unbreakable vow, you'd croak.
As a viewer.
But meaning, this is a big time deal. You cannot just say no.
Because, you know, when the headmasters and Minerva McGonagall are in there, and they dreaded, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? Happens, you know, and they're all like, oh, Dumbledore.
That is going to be the new sound, because that was a clean clip.
Thank you.
That's going to be every time that happens, we're doing that.
Thank you. And you hear Madame Maxine, this is not right. You know, she's just like all upset. And they say, well, too bad. Too bad it's a magical contract, and it kind of just has this like, what do you mean too bad? You're Albus friggin' Dumbledore.
Right.
Like, you can bippity-boppity-boo whatever it is that you want. So I think that we needed a little bit more because it kind of left me feeling like...
Well, why didn't you just say no?
Like, it makes me feel that Dumbledore is just like, whatever, guys, he's my pawn. Like, it's okay.
Yeah, I remember Barty in the film, but senior, saying, well, no, this is a magic contract. Like, you can't just not do it. But you're right. It feels glossed over in the film. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of diverging...
Which needs
methods
to
here between the film and the book, especially in this chapter, I feel like.
So we get this really weird situation between Karkaroff.
Well, actually, you know what? Before we get into that, because we're talking about the Goblet of Fire and the magic behind it and the magical contract behind it. Like, my sense of the Goblet of Fire is that it is... obviously very clearly a magical object. And it the purpose behind it is that it's supposed to choose the most worthy candidates from each school.
Correct.
But it spits out two people from Hogwarts.
So, because you haven't read the book, I'll help fill in this blank.
And that's
you.
What I'm getting at. Okay. And if that's the case, can the Goblet of Fire actually be trusted to choose the most worthy of candidates?
So... once again, it's not about age. It is about worthiness.
Right,
okay.
Right.
Barty Crouch Jr., which we're going to learn later in this book. So, non-book readers, I'm sorry. I'm spoiling
it.
But once
podcast.
Again, this is Blake's, the only book that Blake hasn't read. So, there's going to be a lot of me filling in blanks. Barty Crouch Jr. obviously doesn't get stopped by the age line.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why Albus Dumbledore later asks Harry in the next chapter, did you have an older student put it in for you?
Right.
Because older students could have put their names in.
Yeah, because they're crossing the age line.
Because they wouldn't have been bounced back like Fred and George, for example. But knowing, Dumbledore probably knowing, the Goblet's not going to pick a little kid. That little kid isn't necessarily worthy. So Barty Crouch Jr. was able to cross the age line.
Yes.
He confounded the Goblet of Fire. He confused the cup. He did a very important spell, confused the cup into thinking there were four schools.
Okay.
And he put Harry's name in as the only student in that fourth school.
Gotcha.
So Harry didn't necessarily compete against Cedric for the title of being a Hogwarts champion.
Right. It was like if he was just an unopposed candidate.
Exactly.
Right.
He made up a new school. So, and he told the Goblet, there's four schools now. It's not the Triwizard. And that was how he was able to make this happen.
All right. Understood. Understood. Okay. Fair enough.
You're welcome. Oh my goodness gracious. So let's get back. Karkaroff meets up with Harry Potter.
Super awkward.
We need that soundbite. Because he's like walking by and Karkaroff looks at him. Harry freaking Potter.
Oh,
that's what I want him to say. Like Karkaroff just walks by and he stops.
Harry freaking Potter.
And that's basically what happened. And it's like, Karkaroff, everyone knows that Harry Potter is at Hogwarts.
Right.
Everyone knows this. But it's like, oh my gosh.
Well, it shows you... a predisposition, I would think, of Karkaroff to gravitate towards people of not like big power, but of fame.
Mm-hmm.
And he latching, I mean, the way that he treats, what's his name there? Crumb. I mean, it's like he's a puppy dog in his lap. And he's doing the same kind of here with Harry a little bit, where he's just like Harry Potter. And
I don't think it was I like you. So Karkaroff was a Death Eater.
No, I know that.
Karkaroff followed Voldemort. Harry Potter was the end of Voldemort, supposedly. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Not true. So Karkaroff got into massive trouble.
Yes.
Then up behind from both of them, you hear the voice, yeah, that's Harry Potter. It was Mad-Eye Moody.
Right.
Now Karkaroff's wicked awkward because there's a lot of beef between them, which we will get to. Well,
I also have a question here, too. And this is probably... just me being me and conspiracy theorist.
Oh, yeah.
Does Karkaroff have an idea that this is actually Barty Crouch Jr.?
I don't think so.
Because it's not explicit. I mean, if you wanted to take the text as it is, it makes sense.
He's more freaking out because it's Mad-Eye Moody.
I know. But the way that it... When I read it, I just read it like it's you. And he goes, yeah, it's me. And then they just continue on. I just, like, does Karkaroff know at all? Does he have any inkling? Does he have any idea that this is not actually Mad-Eye Moody? That this is actually Barty Crouch Jr.? And that, to me, kind of feels interesting, right? Because if he did, now he must have some recognition that Lord Voldemort is back. And if he recognizes that this is actually Barty Crouch Jr., he is an active participant in allowing Harry to fall into the hands of Lord Voldemort. See what I'm saying?
I appreciate that, but Alistair Murdy is the one that captured Karkaroff.
No, I know. So
that's more of like the beef. You know what I mean?
Oh,
he looks
I get
at
it.
Him and he's like, you ruined my life, man.
If you take the text as it is, that makes sense. But like that part of me that just thinks maybe that there is just some little like a little oomph, a little bit more of an oomph into this. I don't know. I just throwing it out there. I don't know. We'll see. Let the nerd clan decide. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm off my rocker. That's fine. I could be off my rocker.
You know, what is interesting is what's going to happen in the next chapter. So can we just like...
Sure.
Put a little pin in that sucker. Because they do have some interactions that you can delve into this like
okay,
crazy
fair
theory.
Fair enough.
Love.
Fair
I'm here
enough.
For it.
Okay.
Here we go. It's Halloween. You ready?
Yes.
Everybody has a little sleepy sleep. They've got a nice little night. The Durmstrang kids are sleeping in the ship and the Beauxbatons are in their carriage. I don't know, man. I hope that those things are like nice and posh because that is a long time to have to stay on a ship or carriage.
And how many people are in this carriage? Like, I know it's a big carriage, but...
Bippity-boppity-boo, man.
Like, how many people you got in that carriage? How many beds are there? Is this like one of those things with the tents?
Maybe. That's why I'm saying bippity-boppity-boo.
Yeah, sure. Fair enough. I gotcha.
So then here we go. Starting things off. Halloween morning, Fred and George Weasley. Going at it.
These two are the best. They're just ranking on Hermione for spew, and then they try this thing. And they think that they got past the age line, and then they just get... But like they get pushed out, and then they get. I love how Dumbledore doesn't like chide them. Like he doesn't say, you know, you're blah, 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 blah. He didn't. Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire of them?
He
laughs and he's like, you know, that what when the your beards are. That's the best I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't tell them that they're wrong for trying. Yeah. See what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
He doesn't just say, you're all suspended. It's, hey, you know, you tried. I appreciate that.
It's humorous. And of course, there's already a Ravenclaw and a Hufflepuff who are in there. Fun thing. Slytherin didn't try.
Right. A Slytherin did not try.
Which, I gotta tell you, doesn't make sense to me. Slytherins like to cheat sometimes. This one sure does, sitting across from me.
Hey, cheaters want to win the most.
So... I don't know if this was just the author leveling the playing field, trying to be like, listen, everybody's house cheats, not just the Slytherins. I've dragged Slytherin through the dirt for the past three books, so let's try to like even the playing field a little bit. I don't know. I just thought that was quite interesting. That there was a Ravenclaw, Hufflepuff, and now two Gryffindors who have beards and needed to be attended to by Madame Pomfrey. Who knows what happened though at the later part of the day?
Right, right.
The latter
but
part
at least
of the
at
day?
This point, again, the text is suggesting that it's Slytherin free, which is surprising. You would think that the author would specifically make mention of Slytherin.
I know. Now we know that a Slytherin puts their name in, of course, Warrington, But yeah, I did find that very confusing in regards to the houses.
It's got to be intentional, Mary. Like you said, it has to be intentional.
Just to give Slytherins a little bit more credit.
A little bit of a break here.
Maybe they say that Dumbledore, like we're cunning, but that Dumbledore's more cunning. So we're not going to mess with that. We'll go do something else. We'll just like prank the champions.
Yeah, that's a good point. just rank on people.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm all about the ranking on people life. Let's do it.
There you go.
That's why I'm a Slytherin.
Because you're like, Malfoy doesn't do it. Malfoy's saying, like, it's too bad we can't do it. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to do it.
Well, that's definitely Malfoy.
But he doesn't put his name in.
Because he's too
much
of a...
Why would you not have? If you were an underage wizard, being that you're a Slytherin, what would have kept you from putting your name in the Goblet of Fire?
All right, so that's a good question. You have to take two things under assumption. One, that I really want to do it. And two, that I would be brave enough to do it. So there's a difference, right? There's a difference because, like, I'm a Slytherin, and maybe I'm a poor kid. I'm a poor kid. I'm so poor I can't even afford the OWL. I'm Poe, okay? But I need that money. So now I really need it. But am I brave enough to do it? Am I brave enough to go against the will of Dumbledore and the Ageline? Because I already full well know that the greatest wizard of our age has done this thing.
Yeah.
I ain't smarter than the greatest wizard of our age.
Ravenclaws think they are smarter, but continue. Yeah.
So I'm
not surprised one of them.
I'm smart enough to know I ain't screwing around with the Ageline.
Okay.
I'm going to end up like George and Fred with beards and warts and who knows.
Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows if the beard, you can cut the beard off?
They're okay, Blake.
Just throwing that out there.
Bippity boppity boo.
So, what would keep me from doing it? Yeah, knowing that Dumbledore is the one that put this age line in there. And also being smart enough to know that if I'm younger, I probably don't know enough. Why? All them kids died before. Why? Because they were too young. It reminds me, you know what it reminds me of? Kid Nation. I'm only in the third grade.
Kid Nation, my friends. Watch one of the worst TV shows ever made.
No.
YouTube that.
Strongly disagree. One of the greatest television shows ever made.
It was an experiment, okay? Oh. When reality TV was really big, they decided, let's put kids in a city together and see what happens.
Just an abandoned city, and Lord of the Flies it.
And they get to earn root beer.
And they get to call their parents.
Yeah, if you're really good and you win a challenge, you could call your mom. Blake and I were addicted to this show. It was so bad and so sad. Go out there, kill a chicken if you're hungry. I'm only in the third grade.
The little girl that staged a protest.
To not kill the chickens. Oh, bless her heart. Little Hermione Granger in the making.
And the girl Taylor, deal with it.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
no
great.
No one else gets this, Blake.
I don't care.
You and I.
Go, now you have homework. Go watch Kid Nation.
Don't.
No, do it.
Okay, so speaking of Hermione Granger and Spew,
it's the best.
They end up going to Hagrid's to hang out for Halloween Day. And I think it's really cute. It's a Saturday. There's no Quidditch going on. So they could either hang out in Gryffindor Tower, go to the library, and instead they go to Hagrid's. He makes them a terrible casserole that has talons in it. He's wearing an outfit. He has his hair all done all nice.
Oh, that's because he's got a crush.
That's right.
Not a Maxine.
And Hermione tries to get him to join.
Yeah, you don't want you don't want none of Spew either.
No, he doesn't. Because
he knows better.
It's really interesting how he ends up talking about it. He flatly refused to join SPEW.
Yes.
It'd be doing them an unkindness, Hermione, he said gravely, threading a massive bone needle with thick yellow yarn. It's in their nature to look after humans. It's what they like, you see? You'd be making them unhappy to take away their work and insulting them if you tried to pay them. But Harry set Dobby free, and he was over the moon about it, said Hermione. And we heard he's asking for wages now. Yeah, well, you get weirdos in every breed. I'm not saying there isn't the odd elf who'd take freedom, but you never persuade most of them to do it. Nope, nothing doing, Hermione.
Right. You know what it comes down to, I think? Hagrid just knows. What are we doing here? Well, what are we doing? Get out of here. You're taking on a cause that you got no point in having any causes for. And so what? Dobby's a little weird. It's okay. It's all right. He's fine. See what I'm saying?
I think it just continues to prove the point that you don't know, Hermione. you don't know. That would actually make them unhappy.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm interested to know, like, Hagrid obviously spends his time with magical creatures. Yep. So I feel like within that, he probably has spent some time with house elves and gotten to know them. He obviously didn't have, like, a lot of friends while he was at Hogwarts. So part of me wonders maybe if he got a little friendly with, not a little friendly, but, like, friendly with house elves. You know what I mean? He's just, he knows about the centaurs. And I feel like he gives creatures of all shapes and sizes and
all the kinds of respect.
Of mental capacities, lots of respect. So out of everybody so far, you know, I'm appreciating Hagrid, and I'm appreciating him saying, no, you know, we just had Fred and George say, we spent time in the kitchens. They love what they're doing.
Right.
And we have Hagrid, who has the credibility of being someone who knows magical creatures, who most likely knows from firsthand experience. But what it really comes down to is Hermione, go ask the house elves.
Exactly. And it comes back to, I know we've made this comparison a lot, and I'm going to continue to make this comparison until everybody gets it banged into their head.
Ew, I don't want it banged into my head. Just like soaked in over time.
It's
like the tiramisu.
Boozy tiramisu. The good kind.
Fire whiskey.
Joke's on you. One of the greatest Marion Blake Media Hall of Fame moments in history. The fact, it goes back to Downton Abbey. These people enjoy their job. They take pride in that job. And I remember feeling bad almost until until that episode where Mosley says, no, this is my, like, I take pride in this. I don't feel bad for me. I like this. Mm-hmm. I like preparing. I like serving. This is my gift.
Yeah.
I can do this. So I'm fine.
I kind of want to know, like, what do house elves do who don't work for a house, who don't work for Hogwarts? Are they homeless? Are there homeless house elves?
Oh, God, you're so Hermione. Oh, my God. Oh, I don't want to get into that conversation.
I don't know. Just asking.
No, don't ask that conversation.
Okay, so Hagrid, he's all done up. He puts on really stinky perfume. We, of course, find out that he's just, like, absolutely infatuated with Madame Maxime.
Yeah.
And I think it's so funny that Ron is the one that points it out to say, like, oh, look, as he's, you know, showing them that Hagrid is misty-eyed.
Aww,
so sweet.
So sweet.
And then Hermione, he's going up to the castle with her. I thought he was waiting for us. Ron, he fancies her. Well, if they end up having children, they'll be setting a world record. I bet any baby of theirs would weigh a ton. So they're just, their minds are blown. It makes me think of, like, when kids aren't used to seeing their parents canoodle and go on dates, or, you know, if their parents are separated and they have a single parent and that person goes out on dates, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, like seeing these adult figures, or like a treasured aunt or uncle. Yeah, yeah. Like my brother just got married and our kids were like, ew, no, you can't be married, because they know this person only as their single form.
Right.
You know?
Is Hagrid having a crush on Madame Maxime because she's a giant.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the first giant that he's seen in, like, a long time.
And she's dressed pretty and she's elegant. That's what I'm saying.
Like, is it just because she's the only thing around?
I mean, she's also lovely and smart and well put together.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, let's be real, the blast-ended scroots are practically his size, and he's not like, oh, you're attractive. It's not just the size.
Yeah, but it's like the thing.
It's like, you're someone who gets me.
Yeah. You know, also from my assumption from the film, the Madame Maxime and Hagrid thing was already a thing prior to the film.
I don't know.
That's the way that I took it.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? Like, I took
didn't
it as
take it
though,
that way.
I took it as though, like, they knew each other before.
I didn't take it that way. But
you didn't?
Just because of the book. Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
So we get Victor Crumb, we get Fleur Delacour, we get Cedric Diggory, and then, of course, Harry's name gets pulled out of the fire.
I kind of do like the fact that the Goblet of Fire picks Cedric.
I'm glad to hear that, Blake.
Say it out loud.
Okay, you're welcome. But no, I kind of like it because Ron has just been all over Cedric this entire time.
Which, I'm sorry, just because he's handsome?
Yeah.
He's actually quite worthy.
And that's what I'm getting at. I like the fact that even though it's been like a thing, the Goblet of Fire still recognizes that Cedric is actually a pretty good kid.
But Ron hasn't really gotten to know Cedric. You know, sure. Harry had
some interactions. And he's jealous because Hermione likes him.
Yeah. Yeah. And Harry had some good interactions with him, you know, when the Quidditch game and everything, and Harry got hurt. Cedric, you know, made sure that everything was A-okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Ron is just like, this is the pretty boy that everyone lusts after, Mr. Perfect, you know, and Ron is the opposite of that. I definitely know that in high school, there were some pretty girls who I just didn't know that well, that I'd be like, of course she gets that. Of course she does.
Uh-huh.
And really, probably that woman worked very hard and deserved it and everything. But to me, being the fact that I err on the side of Ron Weasley sometimes, I definitely think I would have grumbled under my breath.
Do you know?
Of course the homecoming queen gets to also win this award. Of course she does.
If the Harry Potter series came out like 10 years prior to this, do you know who would have been Cedric Diggory?
Leonardo DiCaprio?
No. Come on now.
10 years prior.
Maybe 15 years prior.
So we're thinking, what, 90?
Mid-90s.
I don't know, Blake.
Come on.
What do you... No, I don't know.
Who I basically modeled my life after.
Freddie Prinze Jr. No, he would not.
Cedric is essentially the Zach Seiler of Harry Potter.
She's
All That. Come on. Come on.
No.
You don't think so?
No.
He's totally Zach Seiler. Freddie Prinze Jr. would totally be the best Cedric.
I think Freddie Prinze Jr. comes off like, I know what I got. And I don't think Cedric is that way. I think he's a bit more humble.
You think so?
I do. I think he is a humble Hufflepuff. So, there, my friends, is the chapter.
Good one. All right, you ready for your different perspective?
Sure.
All right, let's get it done, shall we?
We shall.
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter! I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Ludo Bagman, baby!
Ludo!
Great to see you,
Ludo.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you pay the Weasleys yet?
I don't know what you're talking about. So, I love my life.
Yeah?
I love life.
Why wouldn't you?
I've got the best job in the world.
Yeah, sure.
I love sports. I love games.
Everybody
I love
loves
winners.
You.
I love losers. I love them all, okay? I get to show up banquets 2 days in a row.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
I don't have to make anything. No hot all pockets food. For me.
No.
None of that.
Nah. You don't want no Orville Redenbacher popcorn.
No, no.
Get out of here.
Multi-course, some blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I know you don't know how to say it. It's okay. You know, it's just good.
No, you know,
that's all it is.
We only played in France twice, so they didn't have fries, and I was really confused.
Yeah, well, why don't they have French fries in France?
Which I call chips, because I think I'm from... I don't even know. I don't even know. But I got to tell you.
Uh-huh.
I love my life so much.
Oh, I can see why. You walk into places, people know you.
People love me.
Buying you dinners.
I love it. I get to stay in a wicked nice bed.
Yeah.
There's like 100 house elves here.
They just take care of everything.
Bippity boppity boo. What do you want? New toothbrush? Bam. You need a new bathrobe? You want your pillow fluffed? Love my life.
Did they make the little animals for you out of the towels?
I told them that I particularly like the elephant one. Yes, sir. That's what I do. The only thing that I'm going to have a little bit of an issue with is Harry Potter was chosen by the Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, how are you going to handle that? That's a problem.
It's not my problem. It's Barty Crouch's.
I'm just here for the fun, man.
I'm just here for the fun. Peace out.
Oh, good job, Mary. As always.
I'm like, who am I not really doing?
No,
so there
good.
You go.
Yeah, you know, you perfectly capture Ludo Bagman. Like, that's the, he's the
YOLO,
big,
man.
He's the big, loud, everybody loves me, I love everybody.
Yeah. You,
the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right. We got some emails and questions and stuff like that.
Are you ready to do that?
Let's do it.
Oh, Miles here.
All right, this one comes from Jen.
Hi, Jen.
Jen says the following. Just wanted to express my deep appreciation for the Potterverse and all of the work that you put into it. I work as a hospital social worker in southern United States and began rereading the Harry Potter books again to help with the stress and anxiety that this second wave of COVID has caused as the hospitals
are giving you a virtual hug.
Pretty much overrun. And she said, to put it lightly,
not great, Bob.
She actually put that in there. Just throw that in there.
Well done, Jen.
I started looking for Harry Potter podcasts to listen to along with my reread, hoping to find some kind of kindred spirits that could help bring a little Lumos in this time of Knox. And you two have done exactly that. There have been days with when the only laugh or non-work thought I had came from listening to the Potterverse. So I just had to say thank you. I just finished reading Goblet of Fire when I started listening to your podcast from the beginning 2 weeks ago. And now that I'm all the way caught up with the Potterverse, I am excited to continue this joyful journey with you and the hashtag Nerd Clan. By the way, go to jointhenerdclan.com, become a valued member, an official member of the Nerd Clan. By the way, Jen, I want to do this. Well, first we have to do this for her. New listener, thank you so much. Jen, you've been working hard. And you listen to a lot of episodes of the Potterverse. That's like upwards of like 60 some odd episodes in 2 weeks. Jen, email me at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. I'm going to send you something from the Mary and Blake store.
Yes.
Okay?
You're helping take care of many, many people. Yeah. And we adore you. And we're thankful for your time. And we're glad that we could bring you some Lumos.
That's excellent. So again, email me, maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. All right. The next one comes from Solange. She says, I'm a listener of your podcast since season 3 of Outlander. And wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for the countless hours of fun I've had listening to you. In your latest podcast for chapter 14 of The Goblet of Fire, you discussed if Dumbledore knows that if Mad-Eye Moody is Barty Crouch Jr. I must confess that this point has always disturbed me. I cannot imagine that Dumbledore doesn't realize that it's not his friend. I mean, they're supposed to be close and have to fought together in the first war against Voldemort in the First Order of the Phoenix. And as friends, you regularly speak about events or discussions from the past. And Dumbledore had the whole year to figure it out. He should have the best memory, be the best actor, and know how Mad-Eye Moody would react in every situation. And if Dumbledore never sees through him, that would be a problem. And it is hard to believe for me. In conclusion, there is, for me, three possibilities. Count them. Three. One, two, three.
Bring it on.
Dumbledore knows that there is no textual evidence of it in the book. But he knows, but there's just no suggesting it from the book.
Okay.
Two, it's a massive plot hole. Fair. And number three, they spend no time at all together during the whole year.
I vote three. I vote three. You want to know why?
Why?
He's essentially the principal of a school full of magical kids. He's got all of these different co-workers. You know, Snape complains every single week. Excuse me. I just wanted to let you know that I wouldn't mind taking the defense against the Dark Arts position halfway through the year, seeing as how Mad-Eye Moody continues.
Oh, hold on. Wait, Mary.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Okay, go ahead.
I was already said you're Snape. And just want to make sure. I wanted to follow up on last week's meeting.
Yeah, we want to circle back.
Yeah. I'm still upset about all of this. So, why don't you pencil me in for the same time next week?
Because we're going to have an eventual follow-up conversation.
Every week until I get the position. Thanks.
So between the regular school being totally annoyed by his staff, being totally annoyed by kids doing stupid things, because let's be real, they're teenagers and that's okay.
Sure.
And having to deal with, like, you know, hanging out with Madame Rose Murtaugh, trying to figure out where Voldemort is, doing all the things he's got to do. Then on top of that, there's a Triwizard Tournament. I think Dumbledore's too busy this year. I think once the Dark Mark was shown and everything went down, the Triwizard Tournament and the Goblet, let's rewind, everything that happened at the World Cup.
Yep.
And I think his plate is too full. I think if there was ever a year to try to slip a little something past Dumbledore, it would be this year.
All right, we do have some more emails and such and questions, but we will get to those next episode. Thank you for sending. We're getting email after email after email from everybody, so I'm very happy. I'm very excited. Thank you so much for engaging, but we do have a little bit of a heart out tonight, so we're going to have to move on and close this show out for now. Marvin, do you have anything else to say about this chapter before we let it go?
No, I'm ready to keep moving on.
All right, let's do it.
We want to thank you all so incredibly much, especially those of you who have left us a podcast review, particularly on the Apple Podcast app. I wanted to give a shout out to Devin King 05, been a Harry Potter fan for a long time. I'm a 22-year-old university student who is currently in a competition with my grandma to see who can finish book series first. Oh. And enjoy listening to this podcast at work after reading the chapters the night before. So, yay! Thank you so much, Devin, for tuning in.
You know what I say to that? Go, grandma.
Oh, my God.
Go, Grandma.
Go, Devin. Go, go, go.
Gonna beat you, Devin.
But honestly, thank you all who have taken the time not just to hit that 5-star review, but to take your time to write it. It really makes a huge difference to us being able to get more Potter fans to find us. So if you haven't done that yet, take a moment this week, please, and leave us a review in Apple Podcasts.
Also, too, we do need a new computer, and we are looking for 1,000 members at jointhenerdclan.com. So please, if you want us to get a new computer, help us and get the best content that we can possibly give to you, because ours is on the fritz, man. We would love for you to join thenerdclan.com. Go there, become a member, get all great stuff. Help us out.
Yeah. On that note, my name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.